And this is less of a message and probably more of a challenge for us. I'm going to start with a little story, a bit of humor. And then I want to take us on a really quick trot as we look at God's people and their journeys as they transition from different stages to stage to stage. And then I want to bring us back here in Merton Baptist Church and just look at how that then applies to us. So the story that I want to tell is about a man who was out hunting in the countryside. And as he pushes his way through deep undergrowth, he stumbles, and suddenly, to his horror, he finds himself slipping over a bluff. So in desperation, he manages to hold on to a tree branch growing out of the side of the cliff. And there he is, dangling precariously over a 100-meter drop onto jagged rocks. So he looks up and he realizes that he can't help himself back up to the top. There's nothing to grip onto, and the cliff face is crumbling and it's unstable. And he looks down and he nearly passes out in fright because he could never survive such a fall. So in panic, he started to cry out, and he cries out, "Help! Help! Is anybody there?" Now, of course, that's an instinctive reaction. He is out on his own, and the possibility of anybody being there is near to nil. So you can imagine that he nearly falls over when he hears a voice back, and the voice says, "I'm here. What do you want?" So he's trying to figure out where this voice is coming from, but then he thought, "You know what? I just need some help." So he yells back, "I need help. I'm about to fall and I'm stuck. Please, please, help me get back up." So the voice from above is warm and sympathetic, and he says, "Don't panic, lad. I'll get you to safety, but you must do one thing for me in order for that to happen." "Anything," he says, "anything. I'll do anything. Just get me back up from here." And five short words came from the voice. "Let go of the branch." So there's silence as he, despite his desperation, tries to determine, "What on earth do I do here? I can see the consequences of me letting go of this branch. I can visibly see that I cannot survive this." Finally, he calls out, "Is there anybody else up there?" And life can feel like that sometimes, can't it? A series of crises, one after the other, that leaves us feeling like we're hanging on to a thin branch with not many options. Well, at least no options that we can think of in our own human ability. And recently, even now actually, doesn't it feel like that? That the world is going through a huge transition. So many things around us has changed. So many things that we seem to have absolutely no control of. And like that man in the story, many of us have cried out for help many, many times as we struggled to cope with what are quite significant changes where we are completely out of control. And even today, we keep crying out as more and more happen. The world is at war, and we feel like there is no option. So I wanted to just give us a little bit of a reminder. And while there are scripture passages, we're not going to necessarily read them because there are many. So it may well be that you note them, because like I said, we're going to do a canter through looking at God's people both through the Old Testament and the New Testament. And I'm going to start in Genesis. So in Genesis chapter 12, we begin with Abraham. Abraham is settled with his family. He's running his father's business. Suddenly God calls him to uproot himself in Genesis chapter 12. and to leave it all behind. He says, go to a place that I will show you. Now at this point, Abraham doesn't know where this place is. All he's told is, go to a place that I will show you. So with a little more than a promise and lots of uncertainty about what that might actually mean, he pulls up his tent pegs and he goes. And in doing so, Abraham shows us the kind of risk-taking and journeying that faith inevitably involves. We have to have the faith even when we do not know what the end result is going to be. Fast forward a little bit. We're now in Genesis chapter 42. And a few chapters, actually, going straight over to about 43. And we're in Canaan. So God has led his people to Canaan. And Abraham and his descendants have settled in the promised land that God has been leading them to. It took many years to get them there. Then we're at a point now where a crisis happens. Famine has hit the whole region. And Jacob, elderly Jacob and his extended family, they're forced to leave for Egypt. And we know that story. We know the story of Joseph, and actually we spoke about it a few weeks ago. However, what was expected to be a brief period in Egypt develops into more than just a visit. Egypt proves to be very hospitable and welcoming. If you remember from the story, they got the best pieces of land for their animals, etc. And so the family settles down and they grow, and soon generations later, it seems as though all talk of the promised land is forgotten. We settled. But of course, God's children as they are, they continue to grow. And soon they started to feel like a bit of a threat to the Egyptians. And we know what happened. Slavery resulted. We're fast forwarding again to Exodus this time, and we're looking at Moses. Exodus 3, God calls Moses to lead his people back out of Egypt and back to the land that he had promised their forebears. So again, we have a major transition underway, and we see many years, filled with crisis after crisis, risks, hard-heartedness, a people doing things in their own way. And more than once, the Israelites are instructed to let go of the branch. But they resist, and the result is years spent wandering in the wilderness before they eventually take possession of the land. What was supposed to be a transition of a few short weeks became 40 long years. And through the period of judges and the early kings, etc., again, Israel becomes increasingly rich, powerful, and settled. But over and over again, we see where it all turns sour: money, power, etc. So in an attempt to remind them of their calling, God sends his prophets. And we see a bewildering and upsetting episodes where God allows some really awful things to happen to his people, so that once again they will learn to trust him. It ends with the Israelites being dragged off into captivity in a foreign land. And you would remember the song that they sang, "By the Rivers of Babylon, where we sat down, and there we wept when we remembered Zion." And even when they finally returned home, crisis and transitions continued. The rebuilding of the walls of Jerusalem and the reestablishment of life and all the other challenges that came along. So let's just go forward a few centuries and into the New Testament. And we see the arrival of Jesus on the scene. Jesus comes to earth, he takes on flesh. And God's people again are in familiar circumstances. They're living on the road and they're yearning for the Messiah to come. But for them, the Messiah that is coming is going to be a military Messiah who's going to come and avenge them and push their oppressors away. However, that's not what happens. Instead, we got the cross. He does the unpredictable thing and he brings a very different way of life. He brings the cross that brings us into an absolutely new order. An order that's opened up deliverance for everyone, not just for the Jews. And he says, go and make disciples in all nations. And that continues through the New Testament. We saw the new believers, they face the challenges of trusting God in the midst of persecution. The young church facing the challenge of carrying the gospel through the Roman Empire. The Jews having to come to terms with a new age in which God will move beyond their nation. And through all of that, one of the things that remained constant was that God was with his people. Although it took just a few minutes to condense quite a lot of, amount of time, both in the New Testament and in the Old Testament, we see that God stays with his people. Even when things were not going as they had planned, even when they rebelled, even when it meant that things took much longer than it was supposed to, God stayed with his people. I'm going to bring us forward a little bit and talk about Western Baptist Church for a little while, just a few minutes. And I'm going to try and start the story from the beginning. So apparently the first chapel was erected in 1874, Western Baptist Church. It was on the High Street, and it fell under the jurisdiction of Red Hill Baptist Church. And it was opened on the 5th of August, 1874, by Charles H. Spurgeon. And it remained in use until 1958, when we then moved on to Weldon Way. So the church in Weldon Way continued, it remained, and in 1988, this structure was erected with the church building just next door. About 18 months after it was erected, everything moved into the structure because the building was then deemed unsafe. And the original building here on Weldon Way was eventually demolished in 2013. Some of us were here for that. And Julie was our pastor then. We've been trying to get application for a church for a while. In January 2002, there was an application by the church and in conjunction with the Guinness Trust. In 2016, Brian started with us. And since then, we've been working with the property developers to come up with a structure, and we know that things at the moment are within with the planning. On our website, we said we were expecting construction to start in 2020. We are now in 2022. But actually, in 2020, COVID hit us. COVID hit the world, actually. And as a church, we've had to function in a very different way from what we were accustomed to. This was an unprecedented crisis for our time, and we joined millions of churches around the world in the virtual realm, where even the oldest among us had to navigate Zoom. And phrases like, you're a mute, became quite common. As we navigated that crisis, we cried with each other as we navigated pain. We stood outside each other's doors. We offered words of encouragement. encouragement because we couldn't go in. We gave hugs from 2 meters apart, the tears streaming down our eyes. We broke the rules, and we hugged each other anyway when our dear brother Phil died, and we couldn't bear not holding on to each other. We sent care packages. We left food at doors. We doubled up our efforts to support the food bank. We got involved in refugee help. Finally, we were able to come back to our building. And whilst not losing hope, we do feel extremely bruised and uncertain. Our numbers have diminished even further. And we feel as though we are navigating a new landscape for which we are very, very unfamiliar as a church. For Merston Baptist Church, just like the biblical church, 148 years after we started, we have had our share of birth and deaths, illnesses and good health, good leaders and not so good leaders. Years of self-leadership with no physical pastors in situ. We've had much money and we've had not enough money. We've had flourishing membership, dwindling membership, total reliance on God, and sometimes we rely on ourselves. But God has continued to provide for us, and He has been faithful to us. Even when we make wrong decisions, He continues to be with us. He has never left us. He has never forsaken us. So where am I going with this? So over the past few months, we've had quite a lot of visiting pastors. And some of us brave souls have taken up the challenge of standing here to speak to you as well. We've had a band having to regroup and have brought us some amazing worship. And in the words of the worship, they have reminded us over and over again, including today, of God's faithfulness. Our visiting pastors, although they don't know what each other's going to be speaking about, if you go back over the past few messages, you realize that actually the messages have interlinked quite a lot. We've had reminders of the Lord's plan for us, His plans to prosper us and not to hurt us. We've been reminded that our hope is in the Lord. We've been reminded of what faith is and how we as Christians should exercise that faith. We've been reminded and admonished that whatever we do, we are to do as to God and not to man, not to lean on our own understanding. We've even been reminded that in everything, God intends it for our good. Do some of these scriptures sound familiar? I hope they do, because they're all scriptures that have been used from this pulpit recently. Hebrews 13:8. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Psalm 90:2. Before the mountains were born, before you gave birth to the earth and the world, from eternity to eternity, you are God. Jeremiah 29:11. And the Lord declares, "For I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you, to give you a future and a hope." Psalm 32:8. "I will instruct you and I will teach you in the way that you should go. I will counsel you with my loving eye on you." Isaiah 43:18-19. "Do not remember the past events or the things of old. Look, God to do something new. Even now it is coming. Indeed, I will make a way in the wilderness and rivers in the desert. Romans 12:2. Do not be conformed to this age, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may discern what is the good, pleasing, and perfect will of God. Psalm 51:10. Create in me a clean heart, and renew a steadfast spirit within me. Paul reminded us this morning that in a few weeks' time we'll be saying goodbye to Pastor Bright, which would mean that we're going through another period of transition, another season. Individually, we've already been praying about this new season, and I know the deacons are already starting to think through and seek counsel on our way forward. As a church, we're going to be continuing this transition. So my challenge to you this morning as I wrap up is this. Will we rely on our own wisdom? Our own sphere of thinking? Our own knowledge? Our habits and traditions? Our preconceived notions of how things should be done? Will we rely on our own understanding? Or will we listen to the voice of the Lord? Will we let go of the branch? Thank you.